Ekadapandavandrashtam Pratitam Purushottama Indraprastham Gita Shriman Yudanadi Vivita. Others? Shri Sukhavacha Ekadapandavandrashtam Patitan Purushottama Indraprastham Gita Shrimam Yudanadi Bhivita Sri Shukuru Vacha. Sukadevika Swami said, Ekada, once, Pandavan, the sons of Pandu, Drastum, to see, Patitan, visible, Purusha Uttamaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Indraprastham, to Indraprastha, the Pandava's capital, Gataha, went, Sriman, the possessor of all opulence, Yuyudan Adibhir, Vayuyudan, Sachaki, and others, Brittaha, accompanied. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, once the supremely opulent personality of Godhead went to Indraprastha to visit the Pandavas who had again appeared in public, accompanying the Lord were Yuyudan and other associates. Purport. Almost everyone except Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram had thought the Pandavas perished in the fire set by Duryodhana in the house of Lak. Now the Pandavas had appeared again in public as Krishna was paying and Krishna was paying them a visit. So previous to this, Duryodhana was always trying to kill the Pandavas. And at one stage, he made a plan to... He built a house. He had a house built in sort of a neighbouring, just a little away from the city of Hastinapur. And it was built out of highly flammable materials, lac or shellac, and apart from that, all around they put barrels and wooden barrels, but they had all sorts of other really flammable substances everywhere, so that basically the house was just a little flame and boom, up it would go. And his plan was to burn to death, incinerate the Pandavas and their mother, Kunti, so hateful was Duryodhana for the Pandavas. Anyway, by Krishna's arrangement, of course, the Vidura happened to warn the Pandavas, and so they escaped through a tunnel underneath that house, and the house was set on fire, and everyone assumed that they were just, you know, burnt to pieces. So then they disappeared for a little while. They went underground. And so the rumor was that they were dead, but everyone except Lord Krishna and Balaram, and of course Vidura, who had warned them, thought that they were actually dead. It was a very well kept secret. Otherwise, if they thought that they were, it was thought that they were still alive, then of course Duryodhana and his henchmen would come after them. And so they went underground for some time. But then later, at the marriage ceremony of Draupadi, they apparently resurfaced. So then there was a rumor that they're not dead and that they're alive, because they've been seen at the marriage of Draupadi. So people didn't quite know what to do. So people didn't quite know what to think. So Krishna, of course, he understood, but he decided that he would go there and find out for himself, and see, are they alive or not? I'll go and see with my very eyes. And, he was particularly interested because, of course, the Pandavas and their mother, Kunti, were very, very dear to Krishna. So Krishna went there in state as a royal prince representing Dwarka with his commander-in-chief, Yudan, also known as Satyaki, and some other associates. Krishna wasn't actually invited to go, but he decided just out of his own free will that he would go there. It's described here, Purusha Uttama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so here, this is quite an exceptional event that the Supreme Lord himself would go and see the Pandavas. We know throughout the history, if you look at the history of many, many major religious institutions, hardly any of them can really say that, there's been this major appearance of the Supreme Lord. Sometimes there's a distant voice heard rumbling in the clouds. Some effulgence coming from a burning bush. A lightning strike here and a miracle there. A few prophets wandering around. But, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear, that doesn't happen, very often. So, this is an exceptional occurrence. And at the moment in the news, we see that Mr. Packer is getting married to Erica Baxter, I think it is. Not that we don't care about that. But, all the rich and famous, are going to this wedding, and you have to be extremely wealthy and extremely famous or distinguished somehow like that in order to just get to this wedding. to have some huge yacht to be able to get there, you know, like this. See? But, you know, you don't see, of course, is it Kerry Packer? Or what's it? That's his father, or is it?
James.
James, yeah. You know, you don't see James Packer wandering into our homes, just popping in for dinner one night. You know, important personalities like that, you don't see them. Not only do they not pop in and visit us, they don't even pop into, you know, our temple. But they also certainly don't invite the average person, even the very wealthy. Most of the wealthy, you know, millionaires and very famous people still don't get to see, you know, go to these important people. You know, don't even get an invite. So here, you know, here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the proprietor of unlimited universes. He is the creator of billions and billions of Kerry Packers and many, many universes throughout the course of time. This is the, you know, he is the supreme lord of all the spiritual planets and all the material worlds. His, you know, his position, his fame, his opulence, his status is inconceivable. We cannot conceive of it. And yet he is, you know, just out of his own will, you're going to see the Pandavas. So imagine how, you know, dear, how fortunate are the Pandavas, and how dear they are to the Lord, and how merciful the Lord is. So this is a, you know, very wonderful occurrence. So he is travelling. I'll just read the next verse. Drisvatam agatam pata mukundam akaleshwaram utaso jukapa vira pran mukyam ivagatam. When the Pandavas saw that Lord Mukunda had arrived, those heroic sons of Prita all stood up at once, like the senses responding to the return of their life air. Purport. The metaphor used here is quite poetic. When a person is unconscious, the senses do not function. When consciousness returns to the body, all the senses spring to life at once and begin functioning. Similarly, the Pandavas all stood at once, enlivened to receive their Lord Sri Krishna. So you imagine, you know, that when Lord Krishna personally appears, how they would just, you know, just spring to life. You know, here is Krishna, our most dearest Lord and friend, who is everything to us, and he has appeared. So they just as a, when we wake from sleep and all our senses immediately spring into action, especially on a cold morning. Parisva jachuttam vira angita sangha hatana saha sunanagas mitam bhaktram vikshitasya mudham jayu. The heroes embraced Lord Achyuta and the touch of his body freed them of sin. Looking at his affectionate, smiling face, they were overwhelmed with joy. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that since the Pandavas were never sinful, the term inasaha here refers to the suffering caused by separation from Krishna. That unhappiness was now vanquished by the Lord's return. Yudhisthirasya vimasya kitavan paribandhanam thauganam pariharabhyatta yamabhyam chavivandita. After the Lord bowed down at the feet of Yudhisthira and Bhima and firmly embraced Arjuna, he accepted obeisances from the twin brothers Nakula and Sahadeva. Externally, Krishna was the Pandava's cousin, and their relationship was just like that between cousin brothers, because Yudhisthira and Bhima were externally senior to Krishna, the Lord bowed down at their feet. Whereas he embraced his peer Arjuna and accepted obeisances from the younger brothers Nakula and Sahadeva. Sometimes inexperienced devotees think it is sinful to honour or bow down to an elder brother in Krishna consciousness. But from Lord Krishna's example here, we may conclude that offering all respects to a senior brother in Krishna consciousness is not sinful. Paramasanaha rashinam krishna krishnam anindita navodha vridita kinchit chanderityabhya yavandata. Faultless Draupadi, the Pandava's newly married wife, slowly and somewhat timidly approached Lord Krishna, who sat on an exalted seat, and offered him her obeisances. Purport: Sri Draupadi was so devoted to Krishna that she herself was called Krishna, which is the feminine form of the name, and Arjuna was also called Krishna because of his devotion to the Lord. Similarly, the devotees of the modern Krishna consciousness movement are often called the Krishnas. So it appears that the custom of addressing Krishna's devotees by his name has a long history. There's two more verses. Tathaiva satyaki patta pujitas chavivandita nisasadata sane nyacha pujita pariyupasita. Satyaki also accepted a seat of honour after receiving worship and welcome from the Pandavas, and the Lord's other companions, being duly honoured, sat down in various places. Pritam samagacha kita vivadanas teti hadaradra drisha birambita apristavam stham kushalam sahasnursham pitri svasaram bhari prista bandavaha. The Lord then went to see his aunt, Queen Kunti. He bowed down to hear her and she embraced him, her eyes moist with great affection. Lord Krishna inquired from her and her daughter-in-law Draupadi about their welfare, and they in turn questioned him at length about his relatives in Dwarka. Purport: Vishwanath Chakravarti the court envisions that as Lord Krishna was sitting on his seat, he saw Aunt Kunti approaching in great eagerness to see him. He then rose at once, quickly went up to her and offered his obeisances. Her eyes moistened with extreme love, she embraced him and smelled his head. Tammaha prama vaiklamya dudha katasru lochana smaranti tanbahum klesham klesha payatma darshanam. So overcome by love that her throat choked up and her eyes filled with tears, Queen Kunti remembered the many troubles she and her sons had endured. Thus she addressed Lord Krishna, who appears before his devotees to drive away their distress. Tadaiva kushalam nhobut sanataste kitavayam yatimna smarata krishna bratame prasitastvaya. Queen Kunti said, "My dear Krishna, our welfare was assured only when you remembered us, your relatives, and gave us your protection by sending my brother to visit us." Because there she's referring to Akura. Na te sti sva para branthi vivasya suhridatmanaha tatapi smaratam sasvat klishan hamsi hridisita. For you, the well-wishing friend and supreme soul of the universe, there is never any illusion of us and them. Yet even so, residing within the hearts of all, you eradicate the sufferings of those who remember you constantly. Purport: The intelligent Queen Kunti here points out that even though Lord Krishna is dealing with her affectionately as a relative, He is not compromising his position as the well-wishing soul of the universe. In other words, the Lord doesn't play favourites. As he says in the Bhagavad Gita 9.29, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, I am equal to everyone, so while the Lord reciprocates with all souls, it is natural that those who love him intensely receive his special attention, for they want him and nothing else. So just repeat this last translation. For you, the well-wishing friend and supreme soul of the universe, there is never any illusion of us and them. Yet even so, residing within the hearts of all, you eradicate the sufferings of those who remember you constantly. So, here, Queen Kunti is speaking, and the sentiments that she is expressing reflect, you know, Krishna's own statement in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says that he is equal to all, and yet, you know, he is very, very much inclined towards his devotees. So, how is it that Krishna is equal to all and not partial? Who can give some examples? In what way? In what way does Krishna show that he is equal to all? To that's a good example, yeah. That whoever comes in contact with him, everyone is benefited, right? Even the demons, they get liberation. Yeah, that's a good example. Of course, for the average person who wouldn't even know what liberation is, how would they, you know, see the Lord as being equal to all?
He surpassed to the sinners in the
past. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he supplies the bare necessities or the requirements to everyone. You know, whether they pray, whether, you know, go to the temples or pray, or not. Even the animals. You know, they certainly don't go to the temples and the mosques and, you know, churches and what have you. Little ants going up and bowing down on their six little knees. You know. How many legs have they got? Six? They bow down on four and hold two up, wouldn't they?
Even to Putna.
What's that?
Putana.
What did you do? Yes. Liberation. Yes. Yeah, that was the previous point.
Who can be better than Krishna?
That's right. So, we see that you know, on that point there, that Pete brought up, which is a good point, that he actually supplies the necessities of life to everyone, even sinful people. We see now that, you know, it's just raining. So, you know, it rains in this street, it rains in that street, it just rains everywhere. And, you know, water is necessary for the plants, for the people, for the homes, for the dams, you know. And we know that a lot of people, they're very, very sinful people, you know, in the streets of Melbourne, and, you know, in the countries, there are murderers, rapists, you know, this, that and the other, terrible. Still, it is raining. So, in that way, Krishna is actually supplying, you know, the essentials to everyone. Of course, even with that, if someone, you know, becomes particularly sinful, Krishna is so kind that he's supplying, you know, the essentials to everyone. But just like a parent, you know, a parent supplies food to all the children. Sometimes if you have a big family, you may find that amongst them there might be the odd one that sort of stirs the other one up, the other ones up, you know, causes a bit of trouble, especially in this day and age. There's a, you know, a lot of very disturbed little children running around out there causing trouble. But, you know, but still, the parents are feeding them, you know. All of them, equally. They all get the, you know, the mashed potatoes and the peas and, you know, what have you. So they don't sort of... they don't discriminate. But sometimes when a child is particularly rebellious, then a parent will kick that child out of the house. You know, so generally we see that, you know, Krishna is equal to all. He's supplying the necessities of life to all living entities. But sometimes if people are particularly sinful, then there will be, you know, some further restrictions. but Krishna says, but still I am, you know, particularly inclined to my devotees. And we see this in the pastime with Mohini Murti, when the demons and the demigods were fighting over the nectar of immortality, which was churned from the ocean of milk. And the demons had somehow snatched that nectar of immortality, and they were going to drink it, which would make them very, very powerful. And so Krishna appeared in his Mohini incarnation as this very, very beautiful woman. Sometimes, you know, people, you know, in some Bibles these days, trying to be, because, you know, many women's lib people are disturbed that God is a man. Therefore, in some Bibles, they have the word he, she, when they refer to God. So anyway, we don't have that problem because our God is he, she. So in this particular feature, he, she appeared as Mohini. And so beautiful. She was so beautiful that the demons just, you know, they just lost all sense of, you know, what they were doing, and they just thought, whatever she asks, you know, we'll do it. Before she'd even asked. So anyway, she got back, you know, you just give me that pot of nectar. And she started distributing to all the demigods. And but the Rahu, he was there, he snuck in amongst the demigods, and, you know, he was about to drink some of the nectar. But the sun and the moon, they noticed, and they pointed out to Mohini Murti, oh, you know, there's a demon dressed up as a disguise as a devotee. So they, Mohini, she cut his head off, and his head became the planet Rahu, which I think circumambulates the earth. And the body became Ketu, the tail of the dragon. So in this way, we can see that Srila Prabhupada, just incidentally, he mentioned that you know, when people they supposedly went to the moon, Srila Prabhupada said perhaps they went to Rahu instead. They didn't actually go to the moon. But anyway, you see there how Krishna was, you know, favouring the devotees over the demons. So even though he's equal, supplying, you know, the necessities. Another way that Krishna is equal to everyone is that he just gives everyone their due karma. Right? He doesn't, he just, without any consideration, he just equally distributes the karma as people deserve it, like that. So Krishna is equal to all in different ways, but at the same time we see that he does favour his devotees. Another very famous example where Krishna shows that he's really partial to his devotees is where he decided, because he was equal and because he's God, that in this battle of Kurukshetra he wouldn't take part. Because, you know, naturally if God takes part, he could just kill everybody, you know, just by, you know, raising his eyebrows, even without doing that. So, just one eyebrow, they're all dead. So, he decided he wouldn't take part, he would just be Arjuna's chariot driver. And that way he'd be impartial. So anyway, Krishna had said that, you know, I will go on one side and on the other side can have my army. And whoever I see first in the morning can choose. So the next morning, Duryodhana and Arjuna, you know, were coming in to see the Lord. And Arjuna got there first, and he went and sat by the Lord's feet, who was still sleeping in bed. And Duryodhana was really angry. He thought, oh, he's got there first, he's going to get the army, like that, you know. So anyway, he went, and then when he went in there, he thought, oh, that Arjuna is such a fool, you know. He's by the feet, I'm going to get right by the head. As soon as he wakes up, he'll see me. So he sat by Krishna's head. But of course, Krishna, when he woke up, he immediately looked, and there at his feet was Arjuna. So Arjuna got the first choice. But Arjuna said, well, Krishna, I'll take you. And Duryodhana's thinking, the fool, again, you know, he's taking Krishna. He should have taken the army. So he took the army, like that. So in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna, he is, you know, he made a promise that he wouldn't actually, you know, take part in a partial way. But at one stage, Bhishma, who wanted to show the glories of the Lord, how partial he is to his devotees, he vowed that he would make Krishna break that promise in order to protect his devotees. So Bhishma was so powerful. He was more powerful than Arjuna by far. And at one stage it looked like he would have actually, and he would have, he was about to kill Arjuna. And somehow by Krishna's arrangement, Krishna arranged that, you know, Bhishma's chariot got stuck, and then Krishna jumped off his chariot and grabbed a wheel and was and charged at Bhishma and was going to kill him. And Bhishma was in ecstasy, you know. But, you know, I made God break his promise, you know, because I know that, you know, for his devotee, he'll even break his promise because he's so, you know, he's partial. He loves his devotees. So, and here we see also that, you know, Queen Kunti, she's also in ecstasy, you know, tears of love, because she's understood, you know, that Krishna has, you know, he has come to see them, you know, personally, and she's feeling great ecstasy that, you know, he's showing this great love. You know, he's not acting as just an impartial witness, you know, as the super soul is an impartial witness, or as the Supreme Lord who's impartial to the affairs of the of whatever's going on in the material world. No, he's personally taking interest and coming to see to make sure that they are okay. So, very important point is that any little devotional service, and Krishna says this himself in the Bhagavad Gita, that any devotional service we perform has immense benefit. You know, if we sit and we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know, we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We worship the deities, take prasadam, you know, smell the flowers that have been offered to the Lord, you know, go to the temple, do a little service for the devotee, make some garlands, you know, do some deity worship, anything done, Krishna takes note. Actually, Prabhupada said that Krishna has a little black book. And whatever a devotee does, he writes down, you know, like all the good stuff. Oh, you know. I was, you know, watching some of the pujaris this morning, and, you know, you could tell a couple of them were, you know, a bit ill, and still, you know, they got out of bed and come and, you know, address the Lord. I was thinking they're going to get in that black book for sure, you know. So, you know, and Krishna notices, and I was going to make a point there. Actually, my spiritual master tells a story about the same sort of thing. There was one devotee that he met in France, and this devotee, you know, he joined up, became a disciple, Srila Prabhupada, I believe, and just after the departure of Srila Prabhupada, he fell into Maya. He fell into deep, deep Maya, big Maya. And he left big Maya because he became very inimical, you know, very disturbed in the thought of the Hare Krishna movement, very inimical, and he wanted to completely forget Krishna. You know, as if everything was Krishna's fault, and, you know, by serving Krishna has just caused me so much trouble. He just wanted to completely forget Krishna, so he went out of his way to make sure that he wouldn't even think of Krishna. And, you know, he ate meat, he took intoxication, he did so many, you know, terrible, terrible things for about 13 years. And then one day, I think he was in Canada, he was driving in a car with someone, and they were speeding down the road, and at about 120 kilometres an hour, and they hit an ice patch, and the car just went, you know, it was not going to stop. I don't know if you've ever hit an ice patch, but that's it, you've got no traction. And I used to hit some, you know, doing Sankirtan in New Zealand, you'd hit an ice patch, and, you know, if you weren't travelling too fast, you had a hope. If you were doing anything over 60k, you were, you know, just wherever you ended up, that was it. And then coming the other direction is another car, and it's just this head-on collision, and there is nothing they can do. They're just coming straight for each other, and they're about 2 inches away, and he yells out, Krishna! I thought, save me! I thought, so, you know, at the last minute, and the cars collided and, you know, twisted metal into metal and, you know, just twisted up into this wreckage. And the person in the passenger seat beside him, his head, you know, just come off. He was just a mangled mess. He was dead. And in the two cars, the only space that wasn't a mangled wreck was where he was sitting. And he just pushed open the door and walked out without a scratch.
Amazing.
And his realization was, you know, I tried to forget Krishna, but Krishna didn't forget me. And, so, you know, even a little service that we perform for Krishna, you know, Krishna remembers. So, as you can see here, why Kunti Devi is in so much ecstasy, and the pundit is that Krishna has come to see them. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
I have one question. Who is the custodian of the black book that Krishna keeps?
Ah. Well, yeah, I'd imagine Radharani's probably, you know. She's a custodian of Krishna and all his possessions, his flute, everything.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. He did. Yes. He had. He had. that powerful realization that, you know, I tried to forget Krishna, but Krishna did not forget me for a moment. So he did.
And, is he still alive?
Yes.
A devotee?
Yeah, he's a devotee. Rasa Nandini, did you have it? Yes, very good point. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Exactly, yes. That's right. So that's a very good point. That if we put those two, my spiritual master says, if you actually put those two verses together, then it makes it easy to understand, you know, that verse 9:29, that I am equal to all, but I'm very partial to my devotees. And understanding that that verse there, that as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So everyone has the opportunity to be Krishna's devotee. That's equal. That's an equal opportunity for everyone. And therefore, Krishna is equal to everyone because everyone can be his devotee, you know, and get that, you know, special relationship. Another point. One time. On that same point of Krishna being equal, one time Srila Prabhupada went to South Africa where they had apartheid still operating. And you know, in those days the saying was, the unsaid saying was, if you're black, get back. Have you heard this? If you're brown, stick around. If you're white, you're alright. That was the apartheid. Anyway, the Indian community, they were very, very harassed by, you know, this apartheid, and you know, by the government. They were very much being treated unfairly. So when Srila Prabhupada arrived, they began to you know, mention this to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, so are you getting enough food? And they said, yes. You have clothing? Yes. You have homes? Yes. Your children being educated? Yes. So don't complain. And just take advantage of the opportunity and become Krishna conscious.
Just a comment. There's enough of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. And they were complaining. But, you know, so Srila Prabhupada was, you know, in that mood that, you know, the government representing the Lord, they're supplying the bare necessities. Okay. Yeah, it was a very unusual sort of stance, but, you know, you've got the bare necessities, you've got everything you need for Krishna consciousness. Don't complain, don't waste your life, just take the opportunity to serve Krishna, because Krishna is so grateful for it.